This is Hidden Brain. I'm Shankar Vedantam. Let's begin today by listening to an interrogation. We found it on YouTube. Two young children sit before their mother. The little boy, Jackson, is 2.5. The girl, Reagan, is 5. Both have wary expressions. Here's their mom.
Okay, now we're going to talk about this, you two. Something happened here on the wall.
The camera pans to the wall. Someone has drawn a bunch of lines in black ink.
Who did that?
Reagan instantly points at Jackson. Jackson develops a case of the hiccups. There's a pause.
Jackson, did you do that?
Jackson sees that his sister has betrayed him. He decides to take revenge.
Nope, didn't do that.
No, I did not.
Didn't. Okay, well, when I walked in the room, you looked like you were hiding something.
Jackson decides to pivot. He comes up with an entirely new suspect that can get them both off the hook.
A ghost?
No, a ghost definitely did not do that.
Jackson looks disappointed. Reagan rubs her nose with a hanky and comes up with an approach that's actually kind of brilliant.
Well, I was trying to hide it from you because I didn't want Jackson to get in trouble.
This is especially dark because, as the parents find out later, Reagan actually did do it. Jackson is clearly out of his depth.
Jackson, how do you think this happened?
I do it.
You did it?
Yeah.
You did do it.
But when Mom reminds him there are going to be consequences, he points at his sister and she points at him. Reagan reminds her mother that her brother has already incriminated himself.
Jackson said yes. He did it.
He doesn't know what he's saying right now, I don't think.
Like it or not, lying and deception are part of being human. It takes a certain degree of smarts to lie. Like Reagan, you have to guess what's happening inside another person's mind before you can tell an effective lie. YouTube is filled with videos of parents capturing moments of young children lying, learning to lie, and flubbing lies.
Hey, Brinley, did you get into the Nutella?
No.
You didn't? Really?
No.
Promise?
No.
So that light switch fell off the wall, right?
There was a raccoon. They opened up the door.
So the raccoon opened this door here. So he unlocked it?
I have a child who's 3. And what is interesting about this age is that their brains are on fire.
This is Francesca Gino. She's a professor at Harvard Business School. Francesca studies deception, among lots of other things. Her son is just starting to tell little lies, and she finds it fascinating.
It's very interesting as a parent because I think about my own research on what happens when people cross ethical boundaries, but they do so in creative ways.
Francesca has found that when cheating is creative, or perhaps cute, we tend to judge it less harshly. It's almost as if we admire liars for coming up with clever lies.
And so I find myself looking at my son, sometimes deceiving me, telling me that the light on his alarm clock is on when I know that it's not. And I want to reward the creative excuses and descriptions of his behavior, but at the same time, I feel like it's deception and he should be punished or noticed.
We're going to devote this episode to talking about lying and cheating. It's a rich subject for research among social scientists, and it turns out to be far more complicated than we think. We lie and cheat to get ahead, sure. But we can also do those things out of a misplaced sense of altruism. Anya Samek once ran a study looking at cheating among adults. She got them into a laboratory to play a game where each person had to flip 2 coins. If both landed heads, the volunteer won a prize.
So in this game, you flip 2 coins in private, but the researcher actually leaves the room during the game. So you're free to report any outcome you want. You're not told that you can act dishonest, but you definitely can act dishonest because nobody is in the room observing you.
The researchers couldn't tell who lied and cheated, but they could tell how many people lied and cheated. How? They used math. The laws of probability predict 2 coins will come down heads 25% of the time. But when Anya ran the experiment with hundreds of adults,
We actually find that people cheat a lot. So we expect 25% of the time people will win. They actually win 40% of the time.
But here's the thing. The details of the situation matter. Some volunteers were allowed to have their children with them as they played. Anya found volunteers cheat less when their kids are around. The gender of the child plays a big role too.
We actually see that the entire effect of parents acting more honestly when the child is in the room is driven by daughters. So parents seek to model honest behavior to their daughters, but not to their sons.
It gets even more complicated. Some volunteers were told that they would get the prize if they won. Others were told their children would get the prize. Volunteers were more likely to cheat if they thought their children would benefit.
I really don't want to feel like a bad person for acting dishonest, but if I'm acting dishonest to benefit someone else, especially if that's my own child, then I feel a little bit more okay about acting dishonest. For a long time, we thought that perhaps we had honest people in the world and we had dishonest people in the world. But what we see now is that context actually really matters.
And we'll explore how in just a moment. Coming up after the break, Dan Pink is going to be back to play Stop What Science with me. We'll consider all the other tricky, slippery ways lying and cheating are shaped by social context.
If we came back at 3 in the afternoon, would we behave differently? In particular, would we act less morally, say, by cheating on our time limits or stealing each other's jokes?
Stay with us.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Atlassian. Today, nearly anything is possible, and if we can dream it, teams can build it. So how do you bring everyone together to realize their shared vision? With Atlassian, makers of software for teams, Jira, Confluence, HipChat, and Bitbucket give your team everything you need to organize, discuss, and complete shared work. Atlassian works to help teams large and small ascend to new heights to create what's next. Visit Atlassian.com. Atlassian, team up. Support also comes from Weebly. You don't have to be a web designer or know code to create a fantastic website with Weebly. Created for people with the courage to start their own business and the dream to be their own boss. Choose from professionally designed, mobile-friendly themes. Then just drag and drop to quickly build and publish your site and update your site on any device. Get started for free at weebly.com/brain. weebly.com/brain.
Hi, I'm Chris Benderev, one of the producers of Hidden Brain. And I know we don't know each other that well, but I have a hunch that you would enjoy the NPR One app. It's this portal to hours and hours of great podcasts and local and national news stories. Plus, this week you can get an exclusive preview of the latest episode of the hit podcast Invisibilia. You can find all that in the NPR One app.
This is Hidden Brain. I'm Shankar Vedantam. I'm joined now by Daniel Pink. He's the author of several books on human behavior. But on our show, his title is Senior Stop What Science Correspondent. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Shankar.
On Stop What Science, Dan and I give one another 60 seconds to summarize interesting social science research. As we approach the 60-second mark, our producers bring up the music, just like they do at the Oscars. Our topic today is cheating. Why we cheat, when we cheat, what happens when we cheat. Now, Dan and I are widely known as ethical men, so the only way we know anything about cheating is by reading social science experiments on cheating. Right, Dan?
That's absolutely right. I read these studies, and I was just shocked that people actually cheat.
Shocked. Absolutely shocked. All right, Dan, so what do you have for us today?
Well, before I start, Shankar, I've got two questions for you. Right, I want you to look at the clock here in the Hidden Brain studio. As we're recording this, what time is it?
It's 11 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, great. So now I'm ready to start.
All right, Dan, your first 60 seconds starts right now.
And I have another question. If we came back at 3 in the afternoon, would we behave differently? In particular, would we act less morally, say, by cheating on our time limits or stealing each other's jokes? In four experiments, Mariam Kuchaki of Harvard and Isaac Smith of Cornell posed that question. Does time of day affect our ethical behavior? They found that participants in the morning sessions of their experiments were less likely to lie and cheat than similar participants in the exact same experiments later in the day. And the effect was strongest for people who were the most morally aware. Kuchocki and Smith call it the morning morality effect.
I love it.
They speculate that all the decisions and choices we make during the day eventually wear us down and deplete our moral reserves. So in the morning, when we're fresh, we tend to do the right thing. But as the day goes on, temptations become more tempting, and good behavior can turn bad.
I like this because there's obviously other work which shows that people tend to melt down closer to the end of the day. Your resources feel like they've been depleted. You're exhausted. The pilot sort of has to take a break. That's when the autopilot kicks in, and that's when bad things happen.
Yeah, and if you're going to make moral decisions, make them in the morning. So here we are in the morning. Let's see how moral you are, and can you stick to your 60 seconds, which begins right now.
A guiding principle in sociology and social psychology is that the context matters. We believe that we're autonomous, self-directed individuals, when really we're shaped in very powerful ways by the situation. Leslie John at Harvard, along with her colleagues George Lowenstein and Scott Rick, recently looked at how social comparisons affect the likelihood of cheating. They find in a couple of experiments that cheating might be less about having the opportunity to gain a lot as much as it's about finding yourself in a situation where you're aware that others are doing much better than you. Volunteers who are unaware that others are financially better off than they are cheat less than volunteers who are aware that others are financially better off. One implication of this research, if you run an organization where people are compensated very differently, making those pay disparities public and salient can potentially increase the risk of cheating in the workplace.
Interesting, because people are exquisitely attuned to the norm of fairness.
Exactly. And again, this is not what standard economic theory would predict. The standard theory might say we will cheat when we have access to cheating and when we can get away with it. Whereas what this is suggesting is really you need a behavioral lens to understand how people actually behave in economic situations.
Yes.
All right. Let's go to your next study. Your next 60 seconds starts right now.
Steroids, blood doping, stolen playbooks. There are essential parts of stopwatch science. No, we all know that some people will cheat to win, but does winning also lead to cheating? Last year, Amos Schur at Ben-Gurion University of the Negev and Ilana Ritov of Hebrew University in Jerusalem decided to find out. First, they had participants compete in an estimation contest. The winners received earbuds, the losers, nothing. Then a bit later, everyone squared off in an unrelated dice game. In that second competition, the winners in the first contest cheated much more than those who lost. So, winning makes us cheat, right? Well, not quite. In later experiments, people who'd won a lottery for earbuds, that is, they won by chance and then played the dice game, cheated less. What's going on here? One reason, these researchers say, is the ferocious power, once again, of social comparison. Succeeding makes us feel good, but beating someone else makes us feel really good. Comparing ourselves to others and coming out on top creates a sense of entitlement. And when we feel entitled, we cheat more because, of course, the rules don't apply to awesome people like us.
So I have to say, Dan, the study by Leslie John finds that people cheat more when they compare themselves to others who are doing better than they are. And the study that you've just cited is that people cheat more when they compare to people who are doing less well than they have, whom they've beaten in a competition. So basically,
people cheat.
People cheat, and people cheat all the time. Now, I guess you can look at this and say people cheat all the time, but I think a better way of looking at this is to say that social comparisons are actually central to cheating. When we feel like others are ahead, we feel entitled to do what it takes to catch up. When we feel we're ahead, we feel entitled to stay ahead.
I think that's exactly right. And I think it's something that we don't factor into our own decision making. We need to take that into account. Now, you have some social comparison here, Shankar, because I nailed my time. You have to see whether you can, too.
All right. Here's the final piece of the puzzle. And I have to say this whole exercise looking into cheating has left me feeling much worse about human nature, Dan. Nicole Rudy at the University of Washington, along with Celia Moore, Maurice Schweitzer, and yes, Francesca Gino again, find that cheaters who get away with cheating are often not racked by guilt.
Huh.
They actually experience a cheater's high,
sense
of euphoria. In several experiments, the researchers find that people believe they will feel badly if they cheat, But once they cheat and get away with it, they often feel secretly happier than they did before. Now, this is a profoundly depressing study because it upturns every moral framework I've been taught since I was a kid. What happens if cheaters go through their days not feeling torn and guilty and miserable, but secretly happy? Where's the justice in that, Dan?
I do not see any justice in the cheater's high. I'm with you in that. That just makes me shake my head in disbelief and want to go cheat. What can we do about this? Is cheating something that's going to run rampant?
Yeah, and you know, it raises the question that part of the reason we cheat may not be for the financial and material benefits, but the psychological benefits. If cheating makes you happy, doesn't that serve as an incentive for even more cheating?
It seems like it. I'm gonna leave this feeling dim about the human condition.
All right, so there you have it. Cheating is more likely later in the day than earlier. Feeling like others are getting ahead of you increases your propensity to want to cheat. Doing better than others in a competition can make you more likely to cheat because you feel your brilliance entitles you to more of the pie. Depressingly and horrifyingly, and I hope no small children are listening to this right now, cheating can make you happy. This is probably why Voltaire said that if God does not exist, it would be necessary to invent him. Dan Pink, thank you for joining me on Stop What Science today.
Always a pleasure, especially when you quote Voltaire.
This episode of Hidden Brain was produced by Chris Benderev and Max Nestrak and edited by Jenny Schmidt. Our staff includes Kara McGurk-Allison and Maggie Penman. We used original music in this episode from Ramteen Arablui. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and listen to my stories on your local public radio station. If you like this episode, give us a review. It'll help other people find the show. I'm Shankar Vedantam, and this is NPR. This week on Invisibilia, hosts Elise Spiegel and Lulu Miller go to an Ohio prison to explore whether our personalities are as stable as we think. Listen and subscribe to Invisibilia at npr.org/podcasts. It's also on the NPR One app.